poem by C.S. Lewis, Love's As Warm As Tears. There's some slight misprints of mistranscriptions of this last verse of this poem on the sheets, but I'll be reading the correct version. Love's as warm as tears. Love is tears. Pressure within the brain, tension at the throat, deluge, weeks of rain, haystacks afloat, featureless seas between hedges where once was green. Love's as fierce as fire. Love is fire, all thoughts. Infernal heat, clinkered with greed and pride. Lyric desire, sharp sweet, laughing even when denied. And that imperial flame, whence all loves came. Love's as fresh as spring. Love is spring. Birdsong in the air. Cool smells in a wood, whispering, dare, dare, to sap, to blood, telling, ease, safety, rest are good, not best. Love's as hard as nails. Love is nails. Blunt, thick, hammered through the medial nerves of one who, having made us, knew the thing that he had done, seeing with all that is our cross and his. Now may the words of my mouth and the meditation of all our hearts be now and always acceptable in thy sight, O Lord, our strength and our Redeemer. Well, in this series on the senses, we've looked at hearing and seeing, but coming now to touch, we come to the most particular, the most physical, and certainly the most intimate of all the senses. And it's extraordinary. If one uses a concordance or other means of looking through the whole conspectus of Scripture and looking at the occurrence of certain words in it, you get a really extraordinary picture as you try and think about scriptural perspective on touch. There's a kind of dynamic going on there between the Old and the New Testaments, a dynamic almost of tension and release. When you look at the occurrence of touch in the Old Testament, it's extraordinary how often it's about not touching. It's about restraint. It's about fear, in fact, as well as longing. There's a great deal about don't even if a person or even the cattle touch the holy mountain, they'll die. It's about knowing that God is there, but fearing to approach him. It's about a whole religious system in which you have, as it were, three categories of things. You have the holy, you have the clean, and you have the unclean. And you have an entire system whose whole purpose is to make sure that the unclean never touches the holy. And you've got all this ritual washing and ritual cleansing and this feeling that somehow you must make sure that everything is clean so that should anything touch the holy, at least it should have in some sense been ritually cleansed and prepared first. And so you get this fearfulness in the Old Testament of touching the unknown. You get this feeling, you know, if a priest preparing and with all his ritual cleansing to go in the temple because there he must be, in the vicinity of, if never actually in touch with the holy, should he accidentally touch something unclean, a leper, a dead body, then his entire ritual service is compromised and wrecked. He can't proceed to the temple. Even that sort of faint transfer of connection. And that, of course, is why in the story of the Good Samaritan, as Jesus tells it, the priest and the Levite cross over to the other side of the road. They see the man beaten up. They don't know whether he's alive or dead. But if in the course of going over to examine and find out whether this man who's been left for dead has survived or not, they were to touch, even touch the garments of his body, they would become unclean. So there's this feeling almost of a kind of powerful separation, of a gap across which no hand can reach, where there can be no touch. And yet also, as you read through these passages in the Old Testament, there's a longing for the divine, there's a longing for connection with the divine, but also this feeling of almost being unable to touch. Even at the moment when Moses is met by God at the burning bush, there's a wonderful moment of potential touch where you know, Moses, take off thy shoes from off thy feet. And that's a wonderful bit of being unshod and unlaid. And one thinks of the sensitive soles of the feet sinking into the ground. The place where you are standing is holy ground. You're getting there. But he can't quite make it. And then from the burning bush, you remember, there's this promise where God goes through his senses but leaves touch for the last. He says, I have seen the affliction of my people. I have heard their cries. And then this promise given to Moses, I will come down. I'm going to come down and be there. But it's a long delayed promise. And for all the rest of the laws of Moses and Moses going up onto the mountain, there's still this sense of touch as impossible or forbidden, at once longed for and feared, but never actually happening. Now, by contrast, when you look up touch in the New Testament, it crowds in on you, and with one memorable exception, which we'll come to at the end, it's all positive. You cast your eye down a concordance that would go, and they brought people, they brought children that he might touch them. And the crowds came that they might touch his garment. And the woman came and touched the hem of his garment. And there's this longing to touch Jesus. And of course, these beautiful moments like the one we heard this evening, where Jesus himself engages in that physical touch. And so if you prepare yourself, as it were, a little bit for the good news of the New Testament by entering into that Old Testament feeling, the sense of joyful, fearfully glorious release, whereby at last that which we could never touch gets in touch with us and comes down. The Word was made flesh and dwelt among us. And because he is there, full of grace and truth, the sense of wanting to come forward and at last touch and make that point of contact. And the New Testament becomes, in a way, a great celebration of the blessing of matter, the blessing of bodies, the physicality of God coming to us, being made flesh. And there is a way in which we ought to dwell in that more. And perhaps 2,000 years of the New Testament hasn't been quite long enough yet for us yet to realize that we are no longer in the period of 6,000 years or so of cultural restraint that precedes it. We still tend to talk about our spirituality and spiritual life and religious life and heavenly things in increasingly abstract and ethereal terms. I don't think we've yet comprehended the gospel, that after the incarnation, after the Word is made flesh, and after the bodily resurrection of Jesus Christ, all matter is holy. God has come in touch permanently with the world. He's not lost touch with the world. And the whole sacramental tradition, the mystery of the sacrament we're going to engage in tonight, is all about saying God will come to you utterly, absolutely, eternally, spiritually, right in the midst of the most tangible and physical touching and touchable parts of your life. We need to re-enter into matter and rediscover its physicality. And I must say, that's something that I think the poets are sometimes good at. And I gave you that lovely poem of C.S. Lewis's. I don't know if you noticed, in those wonderful descriptions of love in all its aspects, so physical. The wonderful bit about the tension at the throat and the fire in the veins and the cool smells in the wood. It's just a superbly physical poem. And of course, it finishes with the extraordinary physicality of the crucifixion and the recognition of his cross and ours. Did you also notice that Lewis goes through every one of the traditional four elements there? Each of those four verses, as well as being about a season and about a kind of love, is about, we start with water and then fire and then air and then finally earth as we go through to the hard nails. It's as though he's saying of every element of matter, God and his love are in this, if only we will allow it. So, touch affirms the physical. But I want to finish by thinking about a particular paradox in the nature of touch. Touch is the only one of the senses which is always and necessarily mutual when it's shared between human beings. I might see somebody without their seeing me, or hear somebody without their hearing me. But if I reach out and with the surface of my skin touch another person on the surface of their skin, the sensation is necessarily mutual. It cannot but be a communion. I can't engage in that contact without myself being contacted. I cannot have that tenderness and exposure without myself being tender and exposed. And there's a paradox here that in a moment of touch, we realize simultaneously our distinctness and our union. We wouldn't, if we were already completely a single organism with another person or a single body, we would have no sense of touch any more than we have a sense, you know, of all the different parts of our body. So at the moment we touch somebody else, we know we're distinct. But actually, the moment of touch in which that distinctness is expressed is a promise of union. Because at that moment, we are one in the touch. Because we're both at the same moment experiencing the same sensation for the same reason. And hopefully, if it's a tender touch or a gentle touch, a touch of love or encouragement, we're both experiencing at the same time the same meaning of that touch. So at the moment when the distinctness that might make us feel alone and isolated is expressed, it's also in the same moment and in the same touch overcome. And that's partly why the church must always be concerned with the body, always be concerned with what we do with our bodies, with how we handle one another. That's why the church should have a particular horror of physical violence, of moments when one body touches another to hurt. And why we should be particularly open to the way in which a loving touch and a tender touch can heal. So we experience one with another this paradox of distinction, longing for and leading to union at the moment of touch. No wonder then that Jesus, who came to bring us back into union with God, who wanted to be able to say to us, I am in you and you are in me, as the Father is in me and I am in the Father, who wanted to bring us to the heart of that God who is distinct persons loving one another and yet also one, that for Jesus the language of touch was essential. No wonder people needed to touch him. And we get a glimpse in that passage from Acts of the way in which the pre-gospel, the kind of BC yearning of the religious world, is a yearning for touch that we don't quite get. We had it in this particular translation. It talks about all of the people in the ages before groping after God to find him. Actually, it's lovely in the Authorized Version. It says that haply we might feel after him and find him. That, as it were, humanity is reaching out into a cosmos and saying, where is the one I need to find? whom I can touch. And given that, it's extraordinary how we then get this focus at Bethesda, how we have Bethsaida, we have the blind man, and the blind man's brought to Jesus, and he begs Jesus to touch him. And to have this meaning of touch focused on the blind man is particularly moving, because in a sense, for him, touch has become everything. It's become the complete language of exchange. And Mark goes out of his way to emphasize Jesus' complete openness to touch and to physicality. He took the blind man by the hand, more touching. He led him out of the village so they can be intimately alone together. And then there's this extraordinary moment where Jesus takes his own saliva and puts it on the eyes of the blind man. This most extraordinary moment of this intimate. There's nothing more intimate in that sense, in the kind of terms of touch as well. And then through that, you get this gradual restoration of sight. But the restoration of sight is preceded by this extraordinary intimacy of touch. He is in touch with that blind man in the deepest possible way. I mentioned that there was one exception to this constantly positive invitation to touch, and you perhaps already can imagine what it is. It's that extraordinary moment in the resurrection garden when, entirely understandably, Mary Magdalene, who had touched Jesus in the most beautiful possible way, when she wept and washed his feet with her tears and dried them with her hair, longs to touch them again. And we have that noli me tangere. Do not touch me. Comes as a terrible shock. But hear the rest of it. Do not touch me, for I am not yet ascended to my Father. Now, this is the deepest paradox of all. He's not saying, don't ever touch me again. The touching part of my ministry in your midst is over. By no means. Do not touch me. I'm not yet, seems to suggest. There is going to be a time when you can touch me in a new way. But at this moment, I'm making a transition. Do not touch me. I'm not yet ascended to my Father. But surely we might think, if you ascend to your Father, aren't you going away from us? Aren't we being denied these wonderful moments of touch that the world's been longing for all these thousands of years? And of course, here is the heart of the paradox. By being at the right hand of his Father, by being with the heart of God, in the heart of God, God who is everywhere, God from whom every single moment and every point in space arises, God of whom Nicholas of Cusa said that he is the one whose center is everywhere and whose circumference is nowhere. Jesus takes all that he is and all he's done for us in his humanity into the heart of God, and so into the heart of all things, and makes himself available to be known and, I believe, to be touched everywhere and by everyone. And the meaning of that he'd already made clear in two ways. He'd taken bread and broken it, said, this is my body, poured the wine and said, this is my blood, you can take me and touch me. And he'd also said, I was naked and you clothed me. I was in prison and you visited me. I was sick and you helped me. Whatsoever ye do to the least of these, ye do to me. Jesus was making it abundantly clear that if we want to touch God, we can do it by touching his blessed sacrament or by touching and loving one another. And he will come to us in that. That what we do to one another, he will receive as touch from him. And we, in our own way, are given this extraordinary gift that in his name, we can bless one another. We can lay hands on one another. And it won't just be our touch, but his as well. Jesus invited the blind man forward and touched him. He does the same to all of us now. And as surely as the blind man did, we too, in this sacrament and in sharing peace with one another, will feel after him and find him. Amen.